Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. And Sean, it's a celebration day. The parade is going on in Tampa Bay. The Tampa Bay Lightning are Stanley Cup champions. They won it Monday night. They're still partying. We'll have Marty St. Louis on in a little while as our guest on the podcast. I mean, what did you think of Tampa Bay, man? That was clinical in Game 6, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I thought, you know, Victor Hedman, who was the MVP of the tournament, and I think rightly so. There was a ton of competition there with Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point, and, you know, maybe even you throw Vasilevsky in there with the shutout in Game 7. But, you know, he said that's the best game we've played as the Tampa Bay Lightning. And That's saying something considering what they did in this tournament. You know, I mean, they just completely suffocated the Dallas Stars in that game. And, you know, Dallas tried to push and there was nothing left in the fuel tank. And you know, I got to say, we're going to celebrate the Tampa Bay Lightning this whole episode, but shout out to the Stars, man. They were just a complete mash unit by the time this was over. You know, they haven't had their end of season availability yet. It's going to take an hour just to go through the injuries. You know, at one point, Rick Bowness said that there was a line, you know, for the trainer's table to try and get everybody through there. And they just ran out of bodies in game five. They win, you know, but they didn't have much left. You know, when Sekera got hurt, they were playing 4D for the most part, you know, and then game six, there wasn't a ton of push left there. They tried, and kudos to them. I thought they were a very worthy opponent. But this, you know, you said it was clinical. This Tampa Bay team was clinical throughout the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the best team won. There's no question about it. We like to see that sometimes, right? I mean, we love upsets, but, you know, sometimes the cream rises, the best team wins, and the best team won this year. And you're right about Dallas. And Tyler Seguin said it too. Just to get an ice bag took a while because you had to wait in line on the, you know, at the medical room for the Stars. And they were a mash unit. Even the guys that were playing were banged up. And then you talk about the guys that weren't in. Fox is such an important player to them. Radek Fox, he couldn't play in the Cup final. Blake Como gets hurt. Ben Bishop, obviously. I mean, they're playing Anton Udobin the whole way and he was great. Steven Johns couldn't go. Rupe Hintz couldn't go. There were so many guys. And I think Tyler Seguin was definitely injured in some capacity. So they were a mash unit. They gave it what they had, but they had nothing left in game six after game five. There's no question about it. But you think about what the Lightning were. And we'll touch on this with Marty St. Louis when we bring him on too. That story arc for the Lightning, it goes back to last year. It goes back to that upset that they had, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets sweeping them. Nikita Kucherov losing his cool, getting suspended. Hedman not being able to be 100% for games one and two. Couldn't play games three and four. The Lightning really just losing it. And I think they take a lot from that. It took a while to get back because of, you know, coronavirus and everything like that. But they were able to exercise that one demon, the Columbus Blue Jackets. And that set them on. And Sean, that five overtime game, and John Cooper talked about it. If they lose it in game one against Columbus in the first round, this might go a different way. But they won it. And even though they lost game two of that series, that win, I think, really set them on this path. Do you agree with that?
Well, of course I do. Look, it's all confidence. And the fact that every overtime game they went on to play, you know, except for one in the third round and one in the final, they won. And they played a ton of overtime, right? They played two games against Columbus. They played two games against Boston that went to overtime, you know, a couple against the Islanders, and then a couple here in the final. So, you know, and they were comfortable in one-goal games. You know, I thought there were two things that really struck me after it was all over. One was John Cooper saying, well, I guess we went from the outhouse to the penthouse in 511 days, but who's counting? He used that line a couple of times. Like, clearly it was something that stuck in his craw. And then the other one was, you know, the references to the University of Virginia basketball team and the fact that they lost to a 16 seed and were knocked out as a number one seed. And the Cavalier hat was there at the final press conference. Our colleague John Lane did a story on the sports psychologist that actually addressed both teams. They brought in that guy from the University of Virginia at the start of this year, and he basically told the players to take inventory and to own what they had done wrong and to make amends for it. And it was a season long process. And, you know, when you see it end and you see a lot of demons exercised for a lot of really good players, Stamkos, Hedman, Vasilevsky, Kucherov, all those players, you know, the, the joy is always immense when somebody wins. It felt even more immense, A, because of the circumstances of being alone for so long, and B, because of what they had overcome. It was emotional to watch.
Yeah, it was very emotional to watch. And you bring up Stamkos, and that was emotional for me to watch. I know he was limited in this entire run to one game played, 2 minutes and 47 seconds of ice time, five shifts, but he scored an incredible goal. I mean, that shot was insane that he scored on. And so if he never played, would maybe he goes on the ice to accept the Stanley Cup and he's part of the leadership. There's no question about it. And he goes into the room after game five when they lose in overtime. Don't worry, we still got two more cracks, lifts the boys up. But it wouldn't be the same. He played, he contributed to a win in the Stanley Cup final. And I think that made the huge difference for him. And I think that's why a big reason why we saw Steven Stamkos the way he is and talk the way he is. It wasn't putting on a face. I mean, would he have wanted to play in all these games? Absolutely. But he contributed to it on the ice and off the ice. And, you know, he's been through it. He's been there since 2008. And we'll talk about him with Marty St. Louis, too, since, you know, he's been through a lot there. And to get that Stanley Cup, to be able to lift it up, I can't imagine the emotion he must have been feeling.
No, and look, all the disappointments he's had, the injuries, you know, when he tried to come back against Pittsburgh in game seven, the broken leg when he crashed into the goal against the Bruins, you know, just so many pitfalls, right, in a career that has otherwise been star-studded, and then, you know, kind of almost be questioned because he's had these injuries and he hasn't delivered for a very good Tampa Bay Lightning team for years. And I don't mean individually, I mean as the captain of the team, he hasn't been able to get them over the hump. So to be able to do all of that in such a dramatic way, look, this Stanley Cup final the Stanley Cup playoffs are full of lore, right? We think about all these players, John Drews, right, who never had another year but had that huge year. You know, guys who have scored one goal, Mike Rupp, you know, comes out of nowhere, scores the game-winning goal in Game 7 of the 2003 final. Steven Stamkos had that moment. This is a moment that my son, 50 years from now, will be telling his sons about, or his daughters, or whoever. He'll be like, you know, one of the first finals I ever watched, Steven Stamkos, you know, on a bad leg, came out, and in one shift, because they'll forget about all the other shifts, in one shift, he came down the ice, he beat five guys, and he scored from between his legs under the bar. And it'll just grow as it goes along. And that's awesome. Just grow. Like, that's fantastic. Yeah. And he has that moment, and nobody can ever take it away from him.
No, absolutely. It's incredible. A couple of things that came out of that game six. One, I laughed. Andre Vasilevsky gets the shutout, 22 saves. It's his first shutout. Played every single game. There was no other goalie that played for the Lightning in the playoffs except Andre Vasilevsky, and that was his first shutout. And he gets asked about that, and his answer was finally. And it was just like that, like, finally get one. And then somebody else said, yeah, finally, right? I think it was Killorn said it too. That was a pretty funny moment. And another cool moment, I thought, was when John Cooper brought his entire coaching staff up onto the podium after the game to do the Zoom press conference, his last Zoom press conference. And he's got everybody up there, video coaches, assistant coaches. I thought that was a really nice touch by John Cooper because they are together all the time. That is a family. And Jeff Halpern, one of the assistant coaches, had a great line. What does this feel? You know, well, my 8-year-old daughter is now my 13-year-old daughter. We've been in the bubble for so long. I thought that was very funny, but I thought it was just a nice touch, right, Sean, just to bring everybody up and honor those guys. They're behind the scenes or behind the bench, and we don't hear from them, especially the video coaches, right? And they get their moment there too.
Yeah, no, it was great. And look, everything was so different, right? I tweeted after the game, this is the first time in 20 years that I haven't been where the cup has been handed out, right? So this was a completely different perspective for me. It was different for the players. They had dreamed about it their whole lives, and they didn't have the things that you normally associate with a Stanley Cup final. There wasn't that mass gathering on the ice. The families, a lot of the families weren't there. Everybody was FaceTiming, which was kind of cool in its own way, that they could share the moment that way. And then, you know, the press conferences were kind of the same because you usually do them on the ice, and the formal ones are kind of sparse and take a long time to happen. Yeah. But for me, one of my favorite moments of that kind of setup was Nikita Kucherov crashing Killorn's press conference, who went before him, and you know, Kucherov is on the side telling them to move it along. We're not doing interviews all day. And then they bring him in and he sits down and, you know, on his phone, drinking Gatorade, quote unquote, right. Gatorade. And, you know, just as happy as could be. And you know, couldn't care about anything except wanting to get back in the room with the boys. And you know, the one thing I thought about when everybody signed off is what a weird but special night that must be, and how crazy it must have stayed in that arena for well into the morning, because there was a lot of steam to be let off, a lot of frustrations, a lot of everything, because of what they had been through, not only in their history, but just in the 63 days they were in the bubble. I mean, yeah. You know, there had to have been some pretty wild celebrations.
And then on the flip side, you see like Jamie Benn, right, in his press conference, and he could barely talk. John Klingberg, you know, just talking about how much this hurts and how much it stings and it stinks and all that. Can't imagine what it was to lose that Stanley Cup, you know, because of everything those players had to go through. But then, you know, on the other side, to win it, you know, I thought as it was going on, I thought it was really, I mean, it's been such a unique year. I thought it was actually really cool that there was no family there, that there was no fans there, that it was just the guys, the group of guys that had been together for so long, celebrating amongst themselves. Without nobody out from the outside. And, you know, everybody wants their family there. Everybody wants their fans there, but you get pulled in so many different directions when that happens sometimes. And I thought this was just really cool. It was just, you know, going to the room and be together with the boys and have a blast and enjoy it together, because you want it together. So that was actually my takeaway from it, that it's been such a different year that I thought it was so fitting it was the only way to do it, but thought it was so fitting that that's really how it happened.
Yeah, no, it was. And look, let's get to Marty St. Louis and get some of his perspectives, even on the celebration. He's a veteran, right? He knows where these guys are coming into Wednesday when they're going to have the parade and a unique parade and a celebration at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Stadium. So, you know, Marty won the Cup in 2004, Hall of Famer, has some great insight into what's happened with this team and just chasing the Stanley Cup in general.
Yeah, Sean, and in addition to talking to Marty about the Lightning and the celebration and whatnot, we also talked to him about Henrik Lundqvist, bought out today, the final year of his contract, bought out today by the New York Rangers, which isn't a surprise, but Marty did play with Henrik in New York, went to the Stanley Cup final with Henrik in 2014. So we got some takes from Marty on Henrik Lundqvist, the teammate and the player. When we come back after the interview, we'll give our takes on Henrik Lundqvist and that news of the buyout. But for now, here is that interview with Marty St. Louis. Marty, thanks so much for hopping on with us. Got to ask you, first and foremost here, your former team wins the Stanley Cup. What's your reaction to it? I mean, as a former Lightning player, how proud are you right now? What do you think?
You know, it's pretty cool. You know, you feel like that team, you know, was due to win a cup. I feel they put themselves in a position, for, you know, last 5 years, 6 years, you know, where you feel they always had a team that the possibility to go deep. I think that you realize how hard it is to win, and sometimes it's not always the best team that wins. And it reminds me a bit of the Capitals, and finally they got their one, you know, and they were built on paper. They looked like a team that could, you know, win more cups than they actually did, but they finally got theirs. You know, for the Lightning, for me, like, I listen, all the trainers are pretty much the same guys. I've played with 6-7 of them. You know, I had Coop for a year, from deadline to deadline. A lot of the organization is the same people, the front office people. Mr. Vinnick, what he's done since 2010 is unbelievable. Not just for the hockey team and the community, you know, what he's built around the rink and the experience that the fans get to have when they come watch a game is just awesome. So, you know, for him to finally get a Stanley Cup is pretty cool. And obviously Stammer and Hattie, two guys that I played for a long time there, two good friends of mine. And see Stammer raise the cup. I know he didn't get to play much, not fortunate, but that 2-3 minute shift game was pretty cool and emotional to see. And Hattie winning the Conn Smythe, couldn't be prouder of him.
You know, whenever you get a chance to talk to somebody who won a cup, it's such an exclusive fraternity. I'm curious, as you're watching on after game six and the cup comes out and it gets lifted and the celebration starts, clearly a very different celebration than any of the NHL's ever had before. But does your mind go back to your cup? And is it, you know, that movie that kind of plays in your head all over again?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, get the goosebumps a little bit when Stammer raised it. And, you know, it definitely takes you back to when you had the turn to raise it. Then you see that locker room party and the guys drinking out of the cup and taking pictures. And we didn't have the candy equipment. The camera equipment was much different then. There was no iPhone. So you just trusted that I know there's always people taking pictures, and you trusted that you got your hand on some of them. You know, there's no selfies back then, so
it's probably a good thing, right?
Yeah, it's probably a good thing.
Marty, you talked about Steven Stamkos, and I know how close you guys were when you played with him, and are still now. It's unfortunate that he was only limited to those five shifts, 247, but he did score a goal. The emotion that you saw pouring out of him. I mean, do you think the fact that he didn't play a lot takes away at all from this from him, or is the fact that he gets to do this and he was a part of it, is that all that matters to him?
I think that's all that matters, honestly. He's been there since 08. You know, they build a team around him. You know, he's been a leader there for, I don't know, 7-8 years, actually, probably. You know, he was a young leader, you know, and he was able to have an impact without necessarily playing games, set the mood a little bit and just motivate the guys and keep guys even keel, you know. But for Stammer, who has, you know, he's had a 12-year career. I mean, right? How many games has he had? Like 12 years? I mean, yeah. I don't know. I know he's had some injuries, but I would say, I don't know, 600 games maybe. Like, he's definitely part of it because this is something they've been after for 5-6 years, I feel they could have won it, you know, and the year that they do, he doesn't get to play a lot, but he was part of the regular season stuff. You're definitely part of it. And, you know, and when you're the captain, you know, you're leading on and off the ice. So would we all, including Stammer, like, wish that he got to play more? Absolutely. But, you know, you can only control what you can. And I think he's done a really good job with that.
It's almost unfathomable when you think about it now that if he had played, like, how good they would have been. Look, they had two guys in Kucherov and Point who each had over 30 points. They're the two highest scoring forwards since 2011 in the Stanley Cup Finals, and neither one of them was the MVP. How hard is it for those two guys specifically to score at that level? In your run in 2004, I think you had 25 points in 24 games, so you were a point-a-game player. It's really hard to do in the playoffs. Those guys were almost a point-and-a-half-a-game players. When you look, how impressive is that performance by the two of them?
Oh, it's very impressive. You know, they're a very talented player, and I know there's only one guy that gets the Conn Smythe, but, I mean, you know, you need like 4 or 5 MVP on your team. You need an unsung hero to win cups. Obviously, Hedy won it, but any of those two guys up front could have won it. For us, Richie won it. When you look back at, you know, what, you know, obviously Fedotenko did too. He scored a lot of goals, two in a game seven. You look at Habib Bolin, what he did for us. Like, there's plenty of guys that could have won it. You know, there's only one that can win it. And the guy who wins it usually deserves it. Not that the other guys don't deserve it, but, you know, I don't think anybody's worried about who's going to get the Conn Smythe. You know, and you saw Hedy grab the Conn Smythe, put it aside, and just couldn't wait to put his head on the cup. You know, I think he'll reflect. It's nice to collect the hardware, reflect much later. But, you know, listen, having over a point a game in the playoff, it's a tough achievement. You know, but I think they're that line was rolling and felt good. And, you know, their power play got going. And that really helps top guys feel good about their game. It translates to 5-on-5. And, you know, if you have, you know, I don't know what their power play percentage was, but, you know, if you're 30%, 25% power play, you know, that's probably a goal a game. You're on the ice probably. That's probably a point a game, you know. And then, you know, you carry that to 5-on-5 because you're getting your touches on the power play. And then when you get your touches, you start feeling confident and stuff, and it translates. And their 5-on-5 game was excellent. I think it was such a great mix of players, you know, Point, Palat. People don't understand how good Palat is. You know, he's and I think he's taking a big step in his career based on how he played this playoff. I actually played with Palat and Johnson when Stammer was hurt my the last year I was there. I mean, I think I almost had 30 goals when I got, I think I had 29 goals when I got, no, maybe 30. I don't know. When I got traded at the deadline, I was playing with Palat and Johnson, and a big part of it, you know, I mean, Johnny, you know, was a good skater, fast and a little flashier than Palat. And you saw that a few playoffs ago, but Palat is just a guy that does everything right and stays out of the way. If you know, like he knows where to be and not be in the way of a Point or a Cooch, and but he'll win every battle on the wall. He'll get to the front. Does all the dirty work. He doesn't want the credit, you know. So for me to see him get rewarded this playoff and really meshing with those guys, I wasn't surprised. I mean, some people might think he just came out of nowhere, but no, this is a player that's been building his game up for, you know, 6-7 years, and people that play with him understand how good that guy is and valuable.
I remember John Cooper telling me one time a couple of years ago about Andre Palat. He said it's usually – the Selke trophy is usually a trophy for centers, but if Palat might have a chance to win it one day as a winger. If he was a center, he might get it just the way he played. So, yeah, I mean, Cooper's been talking him up for a very long time. I wanted to ask – I mean, look, this the story arc for this team, it goes back to last year, obviously, and what happened in Columbus. And the lessons that they learned – from that 4 games against Columbus. And you were there on the other side of that at that time, working with Torts a little bit. Did you see them applied in this run in the playoffs? Did you see like some lessons that they could get out of the way that series ended and how that series went and applied now?
Yeah. I mean, I think they definitely evolved as a team and realized, okay, you know, whatever we've been doing has not worked. They've gotten close, but overall it has not manufactured a championship. And I think one of the biggest things that they did this year, and especially in the playoff, is they just stayed patient. They didn't beat themselves. You know, they didn't try to turn a 3-goal game into a 6-goal game at the price of getting a team to crawl back in. And, you know, so I feel like watching them through the playoff, it's a team that really evolved into, you know, playing the game they need to play. And I mean, if a team wants to open it up with them, they can do that, you know. And if it's going to be a tight game, they can check and play a tight game as well. And once you learn that as a team, you feel you're never out of a game. Like if you're down 3, you still know you can open it up. But if you're up 1, you know you can close it out 2. So I think it was a great response from last year. I mean, being the best team in the league and losing 4 straight, that can be embarrassing. That's tough to come back from that. And they, you know what? I respect how they did it. They just went to work and, you know, and build their game up and changed a few things, and now they win, you know. So, you know, if you don't succeed the first few times, just stay at it and keep pushing, and they did that.
How impressive is that? I mean, we've talked about it, and you look at it, but it was so much a part of their DNA, right, of who they are, the talent that they have on their team, their ability to attack. And there's some teams that never learn. They can never figure it out. They're going to try and win every game 5-4 and hope that brings them to a championship. You know, I was in Stockholm with the Lightning early in the season, and they were still trying to figure it out, and they were extremely frustrated because they were having so much trouble figuring out how to play defense and when to play defense and when to go. Like, how hard as a player is that transition? Because you know one thing and you don't really know the other.
No, I mean, it's a mindset. It's attitude. Like, to me, like, anybody who's willing to learn will learn. If somebody just wants to do his own thing and he's not willing to learn, then it's really hard to change. So, you know, changes start with the person to be willing to change. You saw that, obviously, they were okay to put some of their egos aside and just like, hey, You know, I got it. We have to just tweak a little things here and there. You know, we still can play offense. I mean, look, those guys got 30 points, whatever. The offense is there, you know. But I think sometimes it's the risk and reward, you know, like how much risk are you going to take and at what price? So, and I think they really managed that equation this year very well in the playoffs. You know, I don't think, honestly, I watched the whole playoff. I don't think there were teams that were close to from, you know, start to finish the kind of hockey that the Lightning played.
When you talk about change and willing to do it, I mean, I think of, you know, look, I mean, the changes the team made, obviously, you know, bringing in guys like Coleman and Maroon and Gaudreau matter so much. But then I think of the change that even tweaks that you see in Nikita Kucherov's game, right? I mean, the willingness to not always, like you said, not always try to make it a 4-goal game or a 5-goal game. How much change did you see in Kucherov's game from last year to this year, especially in just his mindset and how he, his control, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a little different. And I talked about it before. He didn't seem as frustrated. You know, when you're a top guy and obviously he's coming off an MVP year, he's got his own inner pressure of showing people that, you know, you're not just a one-hit wonder and, you know, you got many great years in front of you. And I think the fact that Cooch was consistently producing this year, I think he was in a good place mentally, especially in the playoff. And when you're in a good place mentally, you know, you make better decisions. You're not pressing. You're not retaliating on the physicality, you know. But if you're struggling to, you know, to put up points, you're not as good as a position mentally, and you might do erratic things because you're upset, you know. So I just thought Cooch was in a really good mental place throughout these playoffs, and his game showed. And he didn't retaliate. He played with jam. He definitely played with more jam in my mind. And, but, you know, under control. Listen, the talent is unbelievable. Like, he's an artist out there. And you know, it's nice to see, and I'm happy that, you know, they bounced back from last year.
So, Marty, look, we've celebrated this team enough. Here's what I really want to know. Everybody has fresh legs. Everybody has 25-year-old legs. 2004 Lightning win or 2020 Lightning win, 7-game series?
Well, I don't know. What rules are we playing in?
That's a good question.
We're playing your rules.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think if we played in our rules, I would give the 0-4 a chance because there was not many whistles.
What about current rules?
Yeah, I mean, if we played the current rules, I mean, I think we would need a long training camp.
Get your legs up to speed, right?
Yeah.
It'd be a hell of a series, though.
Yeah, I mean, just based on goaltending alone, love to see Abby go against Vazzy.
That would definitely be good. I got to ask you, though, and it's the last one for me on the Lightning. What was it like to watch the playoffs and be invested in a team again?
I do that all the time. I mean, I love watching hockey, especially, like, you know, I watched a lot of, you know, Tampa and New York games because I was, you know, I'm both on those teams and I still know many people there, and I pull for those guys, and, you know, or, you know, I enjoyed watching Vancouver and watch JT Miller play. Like, you know, like I play with JT, or if I watch Philly and Kevin Hayes, like I just, you know, you care about some of your teammates and you want to see them do well. So I feel like I still have connection with enough guys in the league that I enjoy watching the games. You know, so yeah, no, I enjoy it. I'm a fan.
I have one more related to the cup final too, and then we can move on to a couple other topics. I need some insider information on, again, on somebody who's won the cup. We're doing this on Wednesday. The parade is today. They won the cup on Monday. What does today, this morning, feel like for a player that wins the cup? We're at like 48, 50 hours. There's been a plane ride home from Edmonton. What are you feeling like right now as a Stanley Cup champion?
I mean, definitely I need a couple cups of coffees. And I know it's going to be another long day. The only sleep they got is on that plane. And they probably were pumped that it was so far because, you know, they could sleep 5-6 hours. Toronto, they would have got home too quick.
Yeah. definitely. it's got to be just an incredible feeling. Look, we wanted to ask you about definitely one other topic here. The news came out today. The New York Rangers have bought out the final year of Henrik Lundqvist's contract. It's not really a surprise. We kind of all expected something to go down like this. You played with Hank. You went to the Stanley Cup final with Hank. Tell us about the Henrik Lundqvist you know from being inside the locker room and being on the ice with him. What was he like for you?
I mean, Hank is a competitor. You know, he really works at his game. You know, he's consumed by it. You know, I mean, obviously, I'm sure he's very disappointed. I don't think this will change any people's opinion on his career in New York. You know, things happen when you get older in your career, and sometimes it's business decision, and sometimes it's performance decision. And you know, I truly believe that, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, and I know he didn't get to win the Cup, but he'll still be a Hall of Famer. And you know, I'm glad I got to play with him, and it's unfortunate that I'm sure he, you know, everybody would have seen Henrik finishing in New York, and I guess he came one year short of doing that. And who knows? I mean, I'm assuming he still wants to play, and you never know. Like some team might take a chance, and Henrik might be willing to keep playing. But he's had an unbelievable career, and nobody's going to look at it like this is not going to have a cloud over what he's done in New York, in my mind.
Can you imagine him in another NHL sweater?
I mean, you know, you look at, you know, it's like the Marty Brodeur, like going to, where do you go, St. Mm-hmm. Louis?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Raymond Bourque going to Colorado, you know. It's weird because those guys only played in one place, and then they play for another team for 1 year. And, you know, listen, I personally, you know, I mean, yeah, I had a cup of coffee in Calgary, but I was in Tampa for 14. Then I came to New York for, you know, parts of 2 years. And I'm happy I did that. I'm happy that I got to experience something mm-hmm. else, you know. And I don't know what's Hank's plans, but I think if he gave himself another year somewhere else, I think he'd have perspective a little bit on, you know, the differences of the experience.
And isn't it too just, I mean, as a former player yourself, like if a team's willing to pay you to play and you think you can still play, why not play, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know, and that's, I mean, I'm sure like he's got time to make up his mind, and I'm sure he's disappointed and some, you know, but over time, you know, he'll probably see some clarity on what's next. And I don't think that's going to be today or tomorrow, but I know free agency is coming. And if, you know, if teams are talking to you, like, you know, believing you and liking you, that feels good. And, you know, maybe, you know, gives it a try.
Well, Marty, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate the time. And look, enjoy the parade. It's a little bit of a different one today with the down the waterway there before they get to Tampa Bay Stadium. I'm sure it'll bring up a ton of great memories and probably make you tired by the time it's over.
Yeah, maybe we should have taken boats too back then. We'll see. All right.
I'm sure.
Have a good one, guys. A
lot of iPhone footage. Thanks, Marty.
Thanks, man.
Okay, thank you.
Great stuff there from Marty, Sean. Glad we got him on. And let's continue on with the discussion here on Henrik Lundqvist. I don't think anybody in the hockey world is surprised that he's no longer going to be with the New York Rangers. We saw that coming to an end this year. And frankly, we've seen it coming to an end for the last couple of years. It's just now hit, obviously, with Igor Shesterkin coming in. If I could just say a few things, just one thing here, Sean, before we really get into a discussion on what could be next for Henrik. You know, you and I are both in the New Jersey, New York market right now. You know, that's where we live. And so we see a lot of games here. We've been around a lot of players here. How fortunate we have been to have Marty Brodeur with the New Jersey Devils for as long as he was there, and how accommodating he is with the media, and how you know, good he is to deal with, and how available he is. And the same is with Henrik Lundqvist. You know, I mean, good or bad after a game, didn't matter. He was at his stall every game talking. He always was analytical in his approach. He was always, his analysis of his game was spot on. He was always available, genuine, professional. Couldn't ask for really anything more from a media perspective, and that'll be missed. There's no question about it. It's not a surprise that he got bought out. It's not a surprise that he won't be a Ranger anymore. They're moving on, and he's going to move on now. And it's a question of what happens next with Henrik Lundqvist. Does he want to keep playing? Does a team want him? Does he want to keep playing? Does he want to play in another jersey? We talked about it there with Marty St. Louis, right? I mean, he loved the fact that he went to New York. It's a real interesting thing, time now for Henrik Lundqvist, but his time in New York is legendary.
Yeah, no, look, he's going to go down as one of the greatest New York athletes ever. I don't even think there's a question about that. But you talk about what's next for him, and we haven't heard from Henrik yet. You know, one statement on his social channels about how great this run was in New York and how much the fans mean to him. And they, look, the fans and Henrik Lundqvist had a special relationship that only a few players have enjoyed here, right? Mark Messier enjoyed that relationship. You know, there's been others that have enjoyed it, but it's not something that's afforded to every athlete. You have to earn it here in New York, and he did, and it was his humanness that allowed it. But when you think about what's next and not knowing what's in Henrik's mindset, does he want to go back to Sweden? Does he even want to play? But if he wants to play, does he want to go back to Sweden and play with his brother? But if he wants to stay in the NHL, here's a little bit of a wild thought that I came up with while we were talking to Marty St. Louis. Tampa Bay Lightning could use a goalie, right? 25 well, games to spell Vasilevskiy
every game.
Yeah, right? So they need somebody to spell him. They're tight against the cap. They're going to have a hard time with a lot of the people they play. But does Henrik want a shot at the cup, right? Does he want that Ray Bourque moment? Does he want to, you know, maybe take a discount and put all his suitors against each other and say, you know, and sometimes it's a fool's errand to do it, right? And to say, well, I think this team has the best chance to win the cup. But look, Tampa Bay is going to be in that conversation of who's going to come out next year and have that best chance for the cup. So does he look at that as a possibility? I don't know, but to me, it's awful interesting, and I might make a phone call and find out what his interest might be.
I think everything's got to be on the table for Henrik. I think it's an interesting thought. The one team that really came to my mind, and it's been on my mind with Henrik for a long time now, if it's going to be it's good. Look, whatever it is, if he wants to play again, it's going to be a one-year deal. It's probably going to be like around 1.5 or 2 million with incentive-laden bonuses built into that contract. That's my thought. That's my guess. Because he's not going in as a number one. He'd be going in as a 1B at best, in my opinion. So the one team I think of is the Washington Capitals. They're not going to re-sign Braden Holtby. He would cost too much. They have Samsonov. Do they want to keep Samsonov without a veteran backup? Probably not, right? Samsonov, you need some cushion there for him. You know, I mean, if they play 82 games in a normal year, is he going to play 60? I doubt it, right? So you want there. He knows, Henrik Lundqvist knows the division. He knows that team well. He's played against that team, I mean, countless times. And on top of all of that, there's a family situation here with Henrik. His family is in New York. His young daughters are in school in New York. They like it there in New York. It's only a train ride away to get to DC, right? So that is the team that continues to come back to me about playing again for Henrik Lundqvist, be it the Washington Capitals. I've heard about the Edmonton Oilers, the Calgary Flames, Colorado Avalanche, no question about it. But I just keep thinking of Washington because we talk about teams that are built to win. That's another one that they are still in their window to win.
Yeah, and look, that one might appeal to him also because who knows if Samsonov's a true number one, right? He hasn't had that run at it yet, and what if he fails? But
yeah,
the key question for me, and you saw it better than I did this year because you were around it, is the transition to a 1B, a 1C, a 2, or an afterthought was not an easy one for Henrik. I don't know. And there are players that don't have that mindset, right? That they don't want to hang around. They don't want to make another run. They don't want to see if the grass is greener somewhere else. They believe what they are. And if nobody else believes it, they're going to go right off into the sunset. And, you know, I think Henrik thinks he's still a number one. You know, you talk to Kevin Woodley, who we've had on this podcast and who does columns for us. Some of the numbers suggest that he could still be a number one. I think he was really hurt by a lack of work this year. I don't know if he's a number one anymore. I don't know if I believe that, but I think Henrik believes that. So I think that may be the opportunity he's looking for.
Yeah, I talked to Steve Valiquette for a story I'm working on, sort of a retrospective of his time in New York. And Steve Valiquette played with Henrik early in his career in New York. And he said he thinks he could play for two more years, but maybe not as a number one. And I think the transition that Henrik went through this year was harder on him because he was in New York doing it. I think that was a big part of it, is that everything about him and being a Ranger is being the guy, the king, that's his nickname. And then you take some of that away and it's hard to deal with. Now the cord has been cut. If he were to go somewhere else, he goes in knowing his role. And it's completely different. I think that there is something. I mean, he's one of the most competitive people out there. So he's going to push to be a number one wherever he goes. Even if he went to Montreal and played with Carey Price, he would push to be the number one. There's no question about it. But it's an idea of new place, new role. When you're in New York, I think that was just very difficult on him to have to sit there and take it in New York was way harder than him than have to sit on the bench for 50 games in wherever the city will go, he'll go next.
Yeah. And look, the other thing about this whole thing is the New York Rangers, and we knew this was coming, far different team next year than they were this year. They also this week traded Mark Stahl, right? So yeah. Two Stahl brothers got moved in the space of 4 days. A lot of moving bills for the Stahl family this week, but you know, They're a completely different team than they were 2 years ago, right? David Quinn's fingerprints are all over this, you know, and changing who they are, changing their culture, making them a younger team. But that's two of the most tenured players on that Ranger team that have been moved out this week, and it really does change what that team looks like going into next year.
All right, but Sean, just to bookend this episode, because we talked so much about the Cup Final. We did a roundtable on NHL.com. I wasn't a part of it, but I had an answer for it. The best Stanley Cup champion in the last 10 years. So 2011 Bruins to 2020 Tampa Bay Lightning. I said the 2013 Blackhawks, but it was a quite interesting roundtable, wasn't it?
It was. Normally we get a lot of people saying the same thing and we have to kind of parse it out. So I asked eight writers, you know, who they said, and we got six different answers, right? You picked the 2013 Blackhawks as the Tracy Myers and Nick Konstantinka. So that was the one that got multiples. But then, you know, the Bruins got one in 2011. The 2015 Hawks got one. The Blues from last year got one. And I went with Tampa Bay this year, and it's not a recency bias. When you think about it, you know, and we talked about this to Marty. Two guys with more than 30 points, only time it's ever happened, and each of them had more points than any other player in that 10-year span. Hedman, the MVP, maybe the best defenseman performance since Duncan Keith. You know, Vasilevsky doesn't even enter into the Conn Smythe, and he had a dominant year. Great in one-goal games, scored a ton of goals, won every overtime game. Like, I would put this team, and hopefully people realize it, and they've discounted it because it was in the bubble and everything else, and maybe some of the opponents they played, but they did knock off the President's Trophy winners. I you know, 10 years from now, I think people are going to look at this team and put it against some of those great teams, and it was a great decade of Stanley Cup champions, and I would love to, you know, just like we asked Marty who would win between 2004 and 2020, I would like to get all of these teams somehow in their prime and have them play in a winner-take-all tournament. It would be hockey for the ages. So it's a great way to think about, you know, what happened this year and to get ready for next year. And we may see this Tampa Bay team again next year, so in the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, we're done celebrating the 2020 Tampa Bay Lightning now. It's time to move on to the NHL draft and to NHL free agency, and the clock never stops here at the NHL.
No, and nor does it stop for us. We're going to be back Friday with our next episode. We're going to have Mike Morial, our draft guru at NHL.com, does the NHL Draft Class podcast with Adam Kimmelman. So, Michael, join us. The games are over, but the news goes on. Everybody stay safe out there.